How did I get a mechanical childhood? I'm so not. Wayne recently asked a number of you if you had any topics you'd like me to discuss. One of our employees said, I would be curious to hear Sarita talk about the company profits. I hear bits and pieces about who she donates money to and sometimes the percentage, but it would be nice to hear her motivations behind those decisions. How does she choose the charities that she gives money to, and how does she decide the amount? It's a good question. Also, how does she decide the percentages for profit sharing and how much money to put back into the company? I guess I'm not that interested in her personal giving. I'd be glad to share that too. That's her personal business, but would like to hear about what happens to the company profit. And I thought it was really a worthy and good something to discuss. Money is one of those things that in polite society they say you should never talk about, the two things, money and religion. And that sounds like we talk about both. Ha ha ha. So strange. it goes back, I think, to a long time ago when John went to a course called The Great Game of Business, where they talk about how you should have open books and talk things through. And I believe monthly we go through the financials of the company, and that's all based on, you know, we really want to be transparent before you. Before I get to that, I'd like to say, so I guess my title is Where Does the Money Go, just because I couldn't figure out a better one. I need a wordsmith. So it's a discussion on money. If you could do the next one. Profits. And John wanted me to cover this before I even started. He said, because we have a very strong misconception about what profits is. If you hear that a company made $8 million, you think, wow, they have $8 million in the bank. That is false. So I needed to talk about profits do not equal cash. Profits are, and then this is a definition John gave me. He's way smarter at all of this stuff than I am. Profits are any increase in assets for which a business does not have increased liabilities or debts other than to the owners, and an increase in wealth. And what that means is you can have an increase in inventory, which, say, for example, you bought 25,000 books and it was worth $100,000. The government says the owners are richer by $100,000. But if you wanted to go to the store, you couldn't take, you know, five of the books along and say, could you please take these for the bread that I need to buy? But they count inventory as part of the wealth of the company. It is extra value, but if things go wrong, it's not easily liquidatable. So it is a concept that we have to kind of grasp. Equipment is another thing that the government thinks when we buy new computers, we buy a new scanner, we buy, who knows what we buy. The government considers that part of the wealth of the company. Again, that's not something you can turn around and take to the store or the mall or even pay your taxes with. But the government says that is increased wealth that you have based on the definition up above. Structural improvements. Just recently we spent $16,000 putting concrete on the front of the building to keep the flickers from putting holes in our superstructure. That is also something that the government considers part of the profits of the company. That is part of the wealth because it has increased the value of the building. Structural improvements are a little bit different than inventory or equipment in that we are allowed to depreciate over time. We have this outlay, we have to pay that check up front, but over time we can write down the value of that as a depreciated item, and that allows us to do lower our taxes a little. On next slide. Taxes. Taxes always come first. When I talked about how the company profits go up, Sunlight continues to look very profitable, and the government says, you owe taxes on that inventory, on that equipment, on that gorgeous building, on all the profits that you've had, and they don't care if we have the cash or not. They say, we want money now. When Sunlight first started, our tax rate was very low. Of course, we didn't make a lot of money, and nobody got paid a whole lot, so we didn't have to pay a lot of taxes at that point in time. About probably 5 years ago, we hit the corporate marginal tax, and I don't think I'll get into the whole marginal thing. John wanted me to. Basically, it says, you know how we all have taxes, progressive tax rates. And when you hit a certain level, you pay this much tax. You get to this level, you pay a little more. Get to this level, you pay a little more. Corporations have the same kind of a thing. You start at a certain amount. When you get to this amount of money, you pay this much month. At one point, we got to a tax rate of 50%, which is a big amount of money. On top of that, because of the way we were set up, and I'll get into this, I didn't set this up very well, but I'm trying. Earlier, John and I both paid corporate taxes of 50% and personal taxes of 50%, which leads to a 75% tax rate for John and I. Back, it was in 98, our CPA came to us and he said, Sarita, you owe $1 million in taxes. Ah, my jaw dropped because we hadn't even made $50,000 in that year. I'm going, how can this even be? It's impossible. where are you seeing this money? What happened was, in 98, we made a decision. Before 98, whenever inventory came in, we right away used, whenever we made a sale, we used that money to buy our inventory. So it was one of those things where we just kept using the proceeds that came in to buy new. But back in those days, we were doubling every year. So you never quite had enough money to pay for all the inventory that you needed. So in 98, by the time we got to August, we had one out of every three orders had a back order on it. One out of every three. Okay, in August, you're already running as fast as you can go, and you have to send out all those back orders to the people that you have books that you owe. So at that point, we decided we would change our model of operation. We decided we would borrow money, buy the books ahead of time, and try to cut back on all the inventory, on back orders that we had. But what happened was we had bought $2 million worth of books to better serve our customers, to get them the books that they needed, and the government said, all that inventory has value. You owe $1 million. We had to take out a loan to pay that tax because the government won't take books. The government won't take your hours. The government only wants a check. I've never written a check for $1 million, but I'm here to tell you, that's a daunting experience, particularly if you're writing it to the government. And to take out that loan, John and I had to sign on our home. We had a liability, personal liability, to cover. Sunlight had $500,000. We only had to borrow $500,000. But I'm here to tell you, we didn't have $500,000. So we signed on our home, and God is faithful, and we paid all those bills. But the only point of that all is the government takes their cut first. Next slide. Okay, this is where I was starting to get to before ahead of time. There's different forms that companies can operate in. You can either be an S-corp corporation or a C-corporation. When Sunlight started, it was a C-corporation because that was the counsel we were given that was the best way to do business. As we thought about it, with the high tax rate where the corporate profits would get paid at charged at 50%, then we would get charged another 50% when we'd receive the money, we thought maybe we should change, and we moved to an S-corp, and that's what we currently are today. And it says an S-corp can be owned by a small group of individuals, and Sunlight is owned by John, me, and our four children. Small group. An S-corp's profits, and this is the reason we did it, an S-corp's profits are treated for tax purposes as if they belong to the taxpayer or owners themselves. So we did this as a deliberate mechanism to cut that huge 75% of taxes, and at this point it's only 50%, because basically the profits from the company come through to the owners of the company, and we pay taxes on it once instead of twice like we did in the past. Is that somewhat clear? In a C-corp, the company pays tax on profits, and then the shareholders also pay tax on the money they received. And that's actually what we were doing at the beginning. We paid taxes on the corporate profits, and then we paid taxes as shareholders on the additional money. So we have switched. Thank you. That's good. Thank you. Recently, the government did lower their tax hit on businesses. I'm not sure that will stay. I think with the current climate in the country, that taxes are probably going to go back up on businesses. Currently, the government gets 40%. I guess I said that already in 1998. That's when we made that change. We moved to an S-corp to reduce the taxes that we would have to pay as individuals. And the tax rate has declined from what it was, which was 50%. Okay. When you run a business, there's only three ways that I know of to legally reduce the taxes that a company has to pay. For business owners, one, you can increase your business expenses. Two, you can pay your employees more, which probably is a good idea, right? Or three, you can give to charity. I think for most business owners, the first one you have to be very careful with. The government gives you a break on the money that you pay for expenses, but you have to make sure that you're not overspending, or all of us get into trouble. For example, if you buy a big house so that you can get the tax write-off on your interest, probably not a good idea, because it never equals the amount of the payment that you're doing. Next one. So I'll go to number two, employee remuneration. At Sunlight, we decided from the beginning that we would provide benefits, profit sharing, and bonuses. And that was partially to drop taxes, but more to make you love working here, to reward your hard work. Part of the rationale behind that was, if you help us be profitable, we want to pass that on. So that was absolutely part of the rationale and thinking behind that. And minus really minimally, I don't even think that comes up on the radar, to reduce the money that we send to the IRS. Some of the perks that we have committed to do from the beginning, and I don't know that most of you know this, so this is why I'm talking about this in this meeting. When we do a bonus, for all the employees in the company, we have set that at 15% of net profit, pre-taxed, and at this point, pre-charitable giving as well. And what we decided to do at the beginning, the government has all kinds of rules and regs. They say every employee has to be part of this, every employee. And John and I, as owners, deliberately chose to pull us from that 15% of net profits. We have done that for years, and that amount does not include John or me. Okay? We do that, we fund that mostly through 401ks, through the Christmas bonus card that you get. All of those kinds of perks come from that 15% net profit. We spend hours going through those charts and working those numbers, and how do we make sure we divvy this up appropriately and correctly. And that is a true benefit that we have decided to pass on to our employees. Wages. I've mentioned in the past that we go through the Mountain States reports every year since we found the documents, and we compare. Do we pay a fair wage? And I'm here to tell you that everyone in the building, unless you get bumped to a new category, is at minimum at midpoint and usually considerably above mid-range of what those pay scales run. I have work environment on there. I talk about a lot that there's things that we planned, for example, when we built this building. When we moved in, I wanted windows. Well, that wasn't done at all in an office warehouse. It wasn't done. I said, but I want the natural lighting. For example, I said, I want the mats in the warehouse. We visited all kinds of companies that were distributing books or walking through warehouses. And I'm here to tell you that all of their employees are walking on cement. And I'm going, think of your ankles and your knees. So I don't remember how much the matting was, but it was one of those things that they put into ice rinks, and it is not cheap. And we pay it gladly because we want this to be a great and wonderful place to work. So I don't say that in any way to say, oh, we're wonderful, but I do want you to know that there's a cost and there is a benefit for you in everything that we try to do. If you say to me, oh, Sarita, my shoulder hurts, we will look all over the place to find something that will help you do that. That is a core value of Sunlight, to care for our employees. Next one. I got to the part where I kind of went, now what do I say? Okay, S-Corp versus C-Corp again. And this goes to the charitable giving point. Remember I said that there were three ways to cut taxes. You could increase spending, care for your employees more, or give to charity. Okay. The S-Corp versus C-Corp also impacts charitable donations. In a C-Corp, they can only give 10% of corporate profits to charity because they assume that all of the shareholders and the owners are taking home huge paychecks, and they let them decide to do with it what they will. So they limit how much a C corporation can give. An S corporation, on the other hand, can give like an individual. So, for example, a person in a higher pay racket, which we are when all the sunlight money comes through, right, can give at a 50% level. Now, that was very intriguing to us because 10% doesn't seem very generous to us. 50% does. In the past, okay, back, this is a longer time ago. In the past, because sunlight was growing so fast in those early days, we just kept pouring that money back into the company because we were just, we couldn't keep up with it all. You know, if you had 100% growth, all the books that you had sold in 1 year couldn't almost begin to cover the cost of the books for the next year. So every year we just kept putting money back into the company. That is not normal. Normally what happens, as I understand it, I guess I just don't know, but normally the boss takes home a big paycheck. And if they have to go in debt, they will, because the boss is important. That is not what we did in the beginning. Sunlight chose to pour the money back into the company, to pay decent wages, to keep the company afloat, and to build it in ways that could be gone. And then the last part there is, because the company, okay, Becca, this is also where we're odd. John and I have always paid a tithe, personally. We also opted to do what we called a corporate tithe. So the 10%, even back then, that we could give, we did give from Sunlight, even back at the beginning. It was just one of those we felt like if we would give 40% to the government, you know, why would we cheat God? Why would we give God less, but we only gave him 10%? But oh well. Next, we did pay a 10% out of the corporate monies even back then. A cash reserve. Okay, this is where it gets a little dicey. Remember I said how most companies, the boss and the shareholders get a huge payout? The profits from the company, from an S corp, go to the owners. I'm sorry, that's the way it goes. It's one of those rewards for living on the days when you're mortgaging your house to pay the bills, when you're laying awake at night not being able to sleep because you're wondering how it's all going to get done. So corporate profits go to the owners. And the government actually agrees with that. It says the government has attributed all of the company's profits, cash and other assets, to us individually as personal income. And we paid taxes on them from those early days. After it's probably been 5 years ago now, John was looking at the profits within the company. Remember I said in the early days we kept pouring the money back in because we couldn't keep up with all the growth and the build. As we had been carefully managing the funds and building the business and growing the company, we got to a point where there was extra cash in the company. At that point, John said, I don't think it's even healthy for the company to keep that much money in the company. What it does is it teaches you to be lazy, careless. It teaches you to think, oh my goodness, we can spend money on limos and whatever else. And his philosophy was that we should pull it out and distribute it to the owners to see what they could do with it. But it would keep the company lean and thinking how to run smoothly and well. So at that, about 5 years ago, we started pulling a distribution once a year, and that was a sizable distribution. And John and I then would give that money charitably. And it's partially a core value of ours. We just don't come from the place where we think we need lots of cash. I know most of you know I drive a Toyota, and we don't have a Learjet, and our house is 1,000 square feet. We just don't live in a wild way of using money. So let's, next screen. Oh, that's what I said. So we chose to donate that distribution. The government, again, has lots of rules and regs. At this point, if you donate, you can write off that tax donate, you can write off that donation, and the government doesn't force you to pay taxes on that. they have what they call a 50% ceiling. So when you get, when you've given 50% of your income, at that point you can't take a write-off anymore for a distribution. Does that, you all know what I'm talking about, right? So John and I got to the point where we were giving 50% and trying to go above that amount of giving. But the government would let us. So we got together with Lance, our CPA, and he recommended that we give, instead of writing all those checks from home, we write those checks from the company. Because there are six owners in the company, we could go to a higher level than just John and I could at our 50% level. Does that make sense? So all of those checks that are written out of here are not much different than they used to be. They're just coming through Inquisicor in an effort to make the giving that we have an opportunity to do be a little more efficient. So Inquisicor wrote the checks. Summary so far. We're getting there, guys. Hang in there. How you doing? Does everybody need to cool off? Corporate profits go toward giving you a quality work environment, paying you an above average wages, giving our customers a quality experience, 40% of marginal taxes to the federal and state government, 15% to employees in a variety of payouts, and 40% to charity. And the other question that someone asked, next slide, is where we give and why. And that's a very good question. And when John heard that, he said, shame on us for not having told you before. Forever, we've tithed on our personal paycheck. We give that one to our church, and we have, from the beginning, given it on our gross. Now, everybody knows that you have a certain amount that the company pays you, the government takes a huge amount, and you have a net paycheck. We have chosen from the beginning to give from the gross, from the first amount. We're going, well, God will have to make up the difference, and he more certainly has. when we started Sunlight, we were working at an agency called the U.S. Center for World Mission. And they taught the concept of the unreached peoples, which are ethnic groups among whom there is no indigenous church movement that is able to reproduce itself. Basically, that's complicated language to say there are people in this world who have never met one single Christian. There's none in their country. Or if there are any, they are in such short supply that you will live your whole life and never meet anybody except Hollywood's version of what a Christian is. In these groups, there are no Christians at all to share the good news of Jesus. Out of every dollar that Christians in America give, think dollar, 95 cents of it stays here in the United States. Supports our churches, supports our Christian schools, supports alternatives pregnancy centers. It stays here in the United States. Does good things, but out of every dollar, 95 cents, seems like a little bit of an imbalance. Of the remaining 5 cents, 90% of that goes to people groups that already have an indigenous church movement. So for example, they'll go send missionaries to Guatemala, which probably has had the church for 200 years. Blessings on them. May they be strong. But you're talking not a lot of cash. Only a half a penny of every dollar is donated to Christian causes that go to the billions of people who have never had a chance to hear. And we are talking literally billions. Billions of people. So when we were at the center, they talked about an acronym to try to help us focus on these unreached groups. They called it THUM, and it stands for Tribal Peoples, Hindus, Unreached Chinese, Muslims, and Buddhists. Next one. Another thing that the center used to talk about was called the 1040 window. And if you think of what a world map looks like, they have the lines of latitude and longitude. The latitude lines 10 degrees above the equator to 40 degrees above the equator. There's kind of a block. If you start from Africa to Southeast Asia, there's kind of a block. They call that the 1040 window. It's based on map points. And they believe that that part of the world has the fewest Christians. They have the fewest indigenous church movements. And they are the most physically needy. They have more poverty, more misery, more suffering, highest death rates, lowest literacy. So our giving journey. How did we get to where we are? Started with the center. Hear of the need. You hear of the call, the important work, the things that need to be done. Because we tended to be charitable, we ended up with banker's boxes. You know what a banker's box is? It looks like what we have our IGs in, those paper boxes. We had, at the end of the year, we would tend to leave most of our giving till the week before the end of the year, because you had to hit the end of the year and you didn't always know how much you had to give. So we'd pull out these, we had two of them, two banker's boxes of appeal letters, two! And we'd put them in piles and we'd read them and we, oh man. And it got to the point where I thought, you know, this isn't even good stewardship. Suppose you send $25 to some agency and they send you 12 letters over the course of the year asking for more money. And I think, this can't be a good use of the Lord's money. So I said to John, okay, let's decide to focus on the unreached groups. If 95 cents of every dollar, 99 cents of every dollar isn't going where the need is, let's us choose to not go that way. Let's put our group, all of our eggs with the groups that are working with this small 1 cent group. Let's limit our agencies. I said, okay, if we could come up with five agencies, one for each of the five unreached groups, I'd be happy. We ended up with four. So we picked the bottom four agencies. The first one that we support is called the Seed Company. It's an offshoot of Wycliffe, which is a group that translates the Bible for people that have never had the Bible in their own language. The Seed Company uses people who live in closer proximity to the unreached groups. So if they're in Africa, they'll pick an African who goes to the next country and they have to learn, they have less of a barrier to learning the language. So the Seed Company we do because we believe that the gospel, the word, should be available for all people to at least make an informed decision based on God's mighty word. Second agency we cover, and that's for Seed Companies for tribals. Okay. Mission India is our second group that we cover, and we did the Rice Bag Project with them. Basically, they have three ways of dealing with the world. They do literacy, where they teach people to read, and they use the Bible to teach them to read, and they find that 30% of the people who go through their classes become believers. The second thing they do is they have an evangelistic outreach, and then the third thing is they do Bible clubs for children. But they are our proxy, or our designated group, for both the Buddhists and the Hindus. And honestly, Mission India also deals with Muslim groups, because in India, you can't tell, but there's almost more Muslim groups in India than the rest of the world combined. But you can't tell because there's so many Hindus. India is just a huge, huge country with lots and lots and lots of needs. The Far East Broadcasting is our third group that we support, and we use them to pay for radio messages that go into Buddhist-speaking groups, Buddhist and unreached Chinese. We have both in there. And then our fourth group is Frontiers, and they deal with Muslims. And I do want to say that none of these groups go in and browbeat or beat someone to become believers. It is more an opportunity to share the hope that's within us. So hopefully that clarifies a little bit of where we are. If you have questions, ask John. No. we just count it such a privilege to be able to use the money that really has just been entrusted to us. We don't take it as belonging to us. We don't take it as us being worthy. We just count it as such a privilege and a joy to be able to share it. And I wanted to clarify where we're coming from, and hopefully that was somewhat clear. Thanks, guys. Thank you for staying awake. I don't know which one it is. That one.